Welcome to Wyoming Stories. I'm Micah Schweitzer. This is the podcast that brings you stories about Wyomingites in their own words. Now, the snow is coming, which means ski season is just around the corner. It's the time of year where people will head up to the mountains with friends and family and enjoy some time on the slopes. So, on this month's podcast, we're hearing stories from people who grew up around skiing and hear about the role it plays in their lives. We'll start with Anna Marno. Anna was born and raised in Centennial, and as a child, she spent most of her time at the Snowy Range ski area, where she became a talented skier. Here she shares her story about how she qualified for the U.S. ski team and what the experience has taught her.
I made the U.S. ski team my senior year of high school, and so this will be my sixth year. As soon as I could walk, and my brother as well, we were walking around either on our carpet or out in our backyard on little skis that you could literally strap onto your snow boots. And then after that, we spent every weekend up at the ski area from the time I was three to until we moved to Colorado for a couple years. My brother and I have always been really close because a lot of times we were the only other kids to play with. I remember we would bundle up with goggles and Carhartt jackets and go have BB gun fights. Or find like axes and machetes and go smashing through the forest just for fun. You know, nothing that was actually harmful to anyone, but could have ended up probably worse than they did. Climbing trees, fishing, we built boats and went up, took them up to the lakes. Whatever kept us busy. We were always outside. We didn't really have a TV or video games or anything. We were always more with outdoor activities, which is why I think one of the big things Wyoming is really special that way, because I think that's how everyone has to grow up in a way. I started skiing just for fun with my family. I guess I always just grew up around gates and racing and had my dad as my coach, and my brother was, you know, did everything he did or tried to at least. And then we started traveling to races when I was eight, more just for fun. And then my brother and I actually ended up doing really well, so we kept doing it. And a few years later, we ended up moving to Steamboat Springs for basically middle school and high school. Bigger schools, bigger mountain, big ski program. Then we moved back to Wyoming, so it's like, I'm not home very much, but when I am home, it's a nice place to come and rest. I spend the summers in Park City, Utah, and take classes at Westminster College in Salt Lake. And then mostly just doing physical training because that's where the U.S. ski team is based. And then during the winter, I'm anywhere from Chile to Europe to Canada to Maine, California. It's kind of been an adventure. I've been hurt a lot in the last few years, too. So it's both instilled my love for it and also kind of shown me the hardest parts of it. In 2011, I tore my ACL, MCL, meniscus, and I think that's it, and had surgery and had to take almost a full year off of skiing. I obviously wanted to have the best, fastest recovery that anyone had ever had, and then it ended up taking a couple more months, and that's kind of been a theme throughout all of my injuries as well. But I managed to come back stronger and better and took a couple months longer, I think, than I wanted, which was hard. And then last season, last January, I did the same thing to my same knee again when I was in Austria and had to fly home, have surgery. And that was a tough one because I was having a really promising season and I was going into an Olympic year. And so I missed the rest of the season and then came back this year. My season kind of came down to the last couple weeks, which was kind of scary. So now I had a really good end of the season and re-qualified for the U.S. team. And we always kind of joke on our team that ski racing makes you grow up really fast until you're about 18 or 20, and then we all just kind of plateau. Our maturity doesn't really change too much since then. So in a lot of ways, I think that we've had to grow up a little faster, and being hurt and having to go through some of those experiences earlier than most people do makes you see the world a little bit differently.
That was Anna Marno from Centennial. Cordelia Czars produced the piece. Next, we'll hear from Jackson residents Sasha Johnstone and David Gonzalez. At the age of 15, on May 25th, 2014, this past May, Sasha became the youngest person to climb and ski the Grand Teton. That's according to mountain guides. Sasha and family friend David talk about what they experienced the day the record was set.
My dad and mom, they were both in the Olympics. I guess they moved to Jackson Hole and they wanted their kids to be skiers, so they got us on skis when we were really young.
How old were you when you started skiing?
I was like 1 year old. Like, I couldn't even walk.
You couldn't even walk?
No, my dad would just hold me there with the little plastic skis.
You have a brother and sister, right?
Yep.
And what are their names?
My brother is Vladimir and my sister is Masha.
How old were you, would you say, when you started first thinking that, like, even like talking about skiing the Grand with your dad?
I was probably around 9 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Was your attempt last year, was that the first time that you had ever skied in Grand Teton National Park?
Yes, it was.
It was?
Yep.
How did you feel about trying again?
Well, I mean, after that, I didn't want to try again. I was so tired, but I knew we were going to next year.
During the ski year, were you preparing for this at all? Were you training for it? Or what did you do to prepare?
This whole ski season, I was in Park City, Utah, skiing Park and Pipe. And then the whole family, we went to France and Switzerland, and we skied part of the Haute Route.
Oh, wow.
And I guess that was, like, a pretty good step closer to skiing the Grand, because it was just as much work or even more.
Just as much work in what way?
Like, just it was a long day of hiking or skiing in the backcountry.
How did your mom end up coming along?
Oh, well, she was just going to come up with us and spend the night at high camp just to get a day. Or she wasn't even going to spend the night, just to get a day in the backcountry. But we got up just a little bit out of cell phone service, and she decided that she's going to spend the night with us. And so we were almost to the high camp, and we met up with some people, and we asked them if we could use some of their gear so that my mom could go up the Grand the next morning with us, and they said yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your mom, actually, and about her athletic background and about how much she skis these days.
She grew up skiing in Stowe, Vermont, and she skied most of her life, and she was in the Olympics for biathlon, which is cross-country skiing and shooting. And I mean, she doesn't really ski much anymore. I think she took, like, literally, like, 2 ski runs before she climbed the Grand and skied it.
So on the first day, we left the trailhead in Grand Teton National Park on the valley floor, and we went up to Jackson Hole Mountain Guides High Camp. We started at 8 in the morning, and we got there, what, around 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Yeah, I would say.
And went to bed at around 9 o'clock or something, yeah. If I remember, when it was still a little bit light.
We ended up getting up around 1 o'clock, 1:15. We headed out at like 2:30, 2:45. It's pitch black. All you're doing is following the person's footsteps that's in front of you, and you can't really see anything. And when the sun comes up, you're pretty much up there.
It's a crazy thing, isn't it, to be hiking up that steep, rock-hard glacier in the middle of the night and in your crampons, huh?
Yeah, it is.
Was it cool? I mean, was it cool to be climbing ice with your mom right there?
Yeah, I never thought I would do that with my mom, but I knew I would do it with my dad.
Tell me about the first turns off the summit.
It felt really good to be skiing.
Did you hear when your dad said, "Hey, slow down a little bit"?
No, I didn't.
Sasha clicked into his skis on the summit, and we're all like, "It's not. That's actually not the hardest or steepest part, right? That's actually fairly mellow, but still, you are at the very top, and it's scary below that." And Sasha clicked into his skis and made like 3 fast turns, and was so out of there so fast before any of us could say, "Hey, slow down a little bit." Tell me what happened after you. After we skied down a bit and you understood that the snow was a little bit scary or funky.
Well, at that point, we were right above the Sneak,
Right.
What is that called? The Star Sneak?
Yep.
Yeah. We were right above that, and so my dad decided, all right, let's put the rope on so we can ski on Belay.
How did those turns feel? Because those are the steepest turns, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I mean, it was icy, and I didn't really like the snow, but I mean, it just was skiing, so just had to make normal turns. Oh, and then I got really nervous when that guy almost hit me and Greg.
That was a really horrible moment, actually. What happened is somebody, there was a guy by himself who'd gone up to ski the Grand, and he seemed really capable because he was moving really fast on the way up. And we started skiing down, and we kind of passed him, right, on the way down, because he didn't ski the very top for some reason.
Yeah, he was kind of down climbing.
He was down climbing the summit block because he didn't like that. And then he skied down behind us, and he was making a turn in the Ford Couar, and his ski tails washed out, and he went down, and he started sliding. And he started sliding towards Sasha and Greg in the Ford, which is a place that you do not want to start sliding, because it's the void. What you're really skiing, the part of it that you're really skiing when you ski the Grand, is the top east face, and it's massive exposure on every side, because it's like cliffs of 1,000-2,000 feet on every side at that point, which means that no fall is allowed. You can't fall.
I was just thinking, I wasn't really thinking about anything else but making good turns and focusing on where I'm going and, being cautious of what's around me, pretty much.
We actually didn't even wait for it to soften up, did we?
Yeah, we didn't. Well, we sat up there and ate some snacks, but then we started going kind of right away.
Well, I mean, I think we didn't wait because we didn't want the snow to start softening up and really start coming down.
Oh yeah, because if people are, there was a ton of people below us, and if they were above us and it was super soft, then they would have been knocking a bunch of slush down that trench.
Right.
And it would have just went right down the couloir straight onto us.
Totally. Yeah, it was actually kind of a crowded day on the Grand Teton. The Grand Teton is getting more crowded every year. And it is amazing, nobody has gotten hurt doing it, you know? So, pretty crazy.
Yeah. I hope it stays that way.
I hope it stays that way, too. Yeah. Did you ever think about the possibility that it was a really dangerous thing and that you could potentially get hurt or killed or that your parents could?
Yeah, I did. That was definitely, that thought went through my head, yeah, but I didn't focus on that. I just, because, I mean, I knew that that was probably not going to happen, but it could. It is really dangerous up there, but.
Right, yeah. Hard not to think those thoughts.
Yeah.
Do you think that skiing the Grand is something that you'll do again?
I hope to, but not soon.
I'm right with you. How do you think that Vladimir is going to want to do it at an even younger age than you?
Yeah, I think he will, but my dad already told him he can't.
Really has to wait till he's 15?
Yep.
I think that's, good parents.
When did you first start thinking about skiing the Grand, David?
I was lucky enough to ski the Grand 11 years ago, almost to the day that we did it, 11 years ago with Doug Coombs and Bill Dyer. And that earlier that year in 2003, I skied in France too. That seems to be a really good way to prepare, because that terrain is in the French Alps is good preparation. It's scary and steep and technical. So I had gone to France and skied over there for a month with Doug Coombs and his wife Emily and their friends. And so I came back, and that's at the time that they were trying to figure out if they could guide the Grand. And so, and Doug was fighting for the right to guide the Grand for Exo Mountain Guides. And so he brought me along basically to show that he could take somebody who wasn't completely prepared And ended up we skied the original Bill Briggs route, which is the full Stettiner couloir, and had an amazing time and went really well. So it's scary. It's a nerve wracking adventure. But when I had the opportunity to do it again with you and your dad and your mom and Greg, it just seemed like too good to pass up.
That was David Gonzalez talking with Sasha Johnstone, both are from Jackson, and the piece was produced by Rebecca Huntington. And finally, we'll hear from the owners of the Snowy Range Ski Area in southeastern Wyoming, Aaron and Becky Maddox. They both grew up skiing, and that motivated them to invest their lives in the Snowy Range. Becky and Aaron talk about how the ski area has not only become their business, but also their passion.
I'm Aaron Maddox.
And I'm Becky Maddox, and together we own Snowy Range Ski Area just outside of Centennial, Wyoming.
I've got a couple degrees from the University of Wyoming, a master's degree in accounting, which led us to the ski area. We saw an opportunity to buy it from a bank. We structured the deal with some friends and family and went for it. It works on so many levels with Becky's background and my background and just kind of the kids and it being a family deal. I mean, I hear them in the background, but you know, they're with us all the time. They're on snowcats. They're in the ticket office. They're in the kitchen. They're everywhere. I think that's reflected through the area and through our lives. And it's a turn I didn't expect in the least. Sort of thought work and life would be separate, but they're not at all.
The really special part was the other night, it was 4:30, starting to get dark. And my son Charlie, who's 3.5, said, "Mommy, can we go skiing?" And I said, "Of course." So we jumped up and got our gear on and went skiing. And that's the really special part of this, is that we can do things like that.
Well, that's way after close. We had to restart a lift for him.
Right. So we started the magic carpet so our son could go skiing.
And the moonlight.
It was in the moonlight. And so it was very, very special.
Yeah, it's cool.
Special to think that as we're working really hard at the ski area to make it work, from Aaron grooming and making snow to making sure everyone's paid and the kitchen's ready to be preparing food for our guests, and down to even making sure that the parking lot is done correctly. It's looking back to my childhood and knowing that passion that I had for Snowy made me want to bring our family all together and be the ski area and make it work for not only ourselves, but for the community of Centennial, the community of Laramie. And every time somebody mentions it, it just seems to grow even more. So that's a very special feeling.
It's a lot of detail, And skiing's the least useful skill you can have. Yesterday I worked 20 hours from about 6 to 2. Yeah, it was everything. It was employees with questions and HR and accounting, and then I went out and I used the groomer to build an inner tube park under the lights, and then, you know, then I came back and had to run some credit card stuff at 1 a.m. and put lists together for pass holders and stuff. So it's literally everything.
Talk a little bit about the feeling you had last night while you were up on the mountain in the snow.
Oh, super cool, because we just put the lights in. Yeah, it was an impact, because it was the lights on this chairlift at night, and I was the only person on the hill at all. And, you know, you're up there by yourself and the lights and you're in a snowcat and you're building and it's a full moon. And it was, you know, I mean, it's a lot of work. It was my 18th hour of work or something like that. But who cares? It was super, super cool.
Some of my favorite memories of the past 3 years are having the family out on a snowcat and seeing snow coming down and out there grooming with my family. And it's just very peaceful to be out in the mountains.
Yeah, and I think the part where dodging around some my mom's story and all this, that when we started this, we had my dad.
You're okay. So really, as we started, just over 3 years ago was when we purchased the ski area, and Aaron's parents, having ran other businesses before, were happy to come and get everything started.
Yeah, I know my mom's spent the whole first season. A month after we bought it, she was diagnosed with cancer. And so she went through all the first stages of chemo and all that stuff the first year. And then the second year, when she was kind of through her first stages, So I guess our second season, she came up and did all the administrative stuff to try to keep us rolling, because I was still working in a bank, actually, and you were still teaching. And so she ran the place, you know, every day, every single day, living up there and everything else. But, yeah, she died of cancer 2 days after we closed.
But her goal that year was for it to be one good season and make the ski area ready for us to run.
It was amazing. That was so cool. She was so into it. And my dad's still up there all the time. He plows a lot all the time. My brother brews beer for us. Pretty family-oriented.
Mm-hmm. My family being in Laramie, they're up as well, watching the children. And my mom works in the ticket office. And so, yeah, it is a very family-oriented affair, as you can hear our children in the background.
There's a little, like, apartment above Ski Patrol. And when we're up at the ski area working, we have to be there. We were literally working all the time. Yeah, we kind of nested like ferrets.
Yeah, so Aaron can come in from grooming and read Charlie a bedtime story and then go back out.
I like seeing the work pay off with things work, with people show up and they have a sort of an effortlessly good time without noticing that we're working really hard. We got a note in the mail the other day from a girl graduating UW, unsolicited. We've never met her. She's a pass holder, has been for 4 years. Just thanking us up and down and talking about how we've created all these memories for her college experience. That we're an integral part of 4 years of, you know, pretty formative years of her life. And that's really cool. You know, I've worked less and made more money, but I've never gotten a note like that because I did good work as an accountant at a bank. I mean, nobody cares. But this is, it impacts people in important ways.
Yeah, I think sometimes we can get caught up in the day-to-day things that we do, but when I get to take a few minutes out to go skiing and I look down from the chairlift and I see kids laughing and people having a good time, that's when I remember this is why we're doing it.
That was Becky and Aaron Maddox, the owners of the Snowy Range Ski Area, and the piece was produced by Cordelia Zars. That's it for this edition of Wyoming Stories. We'll have a new podcast on the first Monday of next month. You can find lots more Wyoming Stories online at wyomingpublicmedia.org. Bianca Coca produced this podcast. Anna Rader is our web editor. Jeff Troxel composed the theme music. And I'm Micah Schweitzer. Wyoming Stories is a production of Wyoming Public Media.